This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following is a production of Dirty Mo Media.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of The Teardown. My name is Jeff Gluck, and I'm along with my coworker who has never heard of J. Cole, Jordan Bianchi. We are motorsports writers at The Athletic, and I am here at Texas Motor Speedway. The wonderful Texas Motor Speedway. We've never said anything bad about this place.
Well, you know what, Jeff? I actually took some, I have like a little monologue here I need to get to start the show with.
Okay.
And frankly,
for
many years now, you have besmirched Texas Motor Speedway. You have called for...
Me? Wait, you're putting this on me?
One of the worst tracks in NASCAR, maybe the worst track in NASCAR. Just this week, for example, you wrote a column laying out all of the issues with Texas Motor Speedway. I don't know of another media member who has called out Texas Motor Speedway more than you. And yet, today, what did we get? We had a fantastic, compelling, entertaining race that saw NASCAR's most popular driver return to victory lane in an unpredictable race. This might be the greatest repave in NASCAR history. Yes, yes, I admit, it took a few years to get here, but they knew what they were doing, and they gave us a great race today on a very challenging surface.
Blink twice if you're being held hostage right now by somebody. Is Marcus Smith at your house? Are you okay?
I'm just saying, I can read your column this week on The Athletic. You have been very, very critical of Texas Motor Speedway. And
I didn't even...
The starch defender of Texas Motor Speedway, I'm no longer going to tolerate it, Jeff.
Oh, I don't know how to open... I've never been gaslighted like this to open the show right away. Wow, these are shocking allegations that you're saying, that you have no role in this, no part in this whatsoever. That you love Texas Motor Speedway all along, and it was just me, like I was treating it like Bristol dirt.
Big fan. Big fan. Number one track. Woohoo, go Texas.
Big fan. Best repave? Okay.
Best repave all right. ever.
All right. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it so much. What was it today that you loved so much more about this Texas race than the previous Texas races, Jordan,
Here's the question. This is a fundamental question. Like, was it a good race? But it was an entertaining race, but was that actually a good race, though? Because it was entertaining because the cautions happened and guys kept having issues and everything. But in terms of actual quality of racing, I don't think it probably was that high. But the cautions and the challenging track made it so.
Okay. Well, here's what I would say about this. I think this is one of the instances where what the drivers enjoy, sometimes they're aligned, you know, short tracks, right? Like, we agree with the drivers that they didn't enjoy it and we didn't enjoy it either, right? I think this is one of those situations where it could be a little bit different because the chaotic nature of the track allowed for some entertainment value, and it allowed for some things that you wouldn't normally see. And this has been the case with Texas quite a few times now. I think this was like, what, the fifth time in the last six races or the sixth time in the last seven races? It's reached double-digit cautions. You know, you had the track record for cautions tied today. And by the way, this was a 400-mile race. The other time there was 16 cautions in the race. It was a 500-mile race, and that was 2 years ago when they were popping tires left and right, and that was why there was so many cautions. This was They were racing hard. They all knew the track was treacherous, and they're going for it. And then they are sort of confined to one line. They're sort of pinned down. They don't have all the racing options that they would like. And I talked to Carson Hocevar after the race, and he finished top 10. And he said, and I was like, so how do you feel about this? Like, do drivers enjoy this kind of racing where, you know, it's so chaotic and it's so challenging and you're so on edge? He said, honestly, like the last race I was here, I finished 16th or whatever he finished. And he said, I could have done even better afterwards. And I realized if I just, you know, let other people take themselves out, you know, and he said, that's what I did today. I just stayed on the low line. And sometimes I had to be more conservative and give stuff up, just let people have the high line. But I was there at the end because I didn't put myself in any of those situations. And he said, it's not really that fun to race like that, but it got him his first career top 10 in Cup. Yeah. So it, to me, I mean, look, I don't think it's like, wow, there were 16 cautions, so it was a great race. I think what it is it was unpredictable, so it was a great race. Because that's, to me, what is, when you don't know who's going to win, and you know, even throughout the day, you're like, I was walking on pit road afterwards with some people, and I was like, so who had the fastest car today? Well, I mean, I'm not sure. Was it Reddick? Was it Larson? Denny? I mean, I don't know. I think you can make a case for multiple people. It wasn't one dominant car. Once Larson's wheel came off, I feel like the dynamic of the race changed. And especially when the cautions came out, the people that were trying these different strategies, like these long shot strategies, you know, Kaz Grala's of the world, right? Like Ty Dillon's of the world. Like they were like, they had a chance to make this work for themselves. And to me, that was compelling because it was like, oh, they're going to stay up there now. How long can they stay up there? It was different names, different people. So for all those reasons, I would say it was a good race, but I could also understand why the drivers would get out and go, ugh, you know, typical Texas. We didn't enjoy that. But to me, I thought it was good.
Yeah, I think chaotic's the right word, right? Like it was chaotic. It was, and that made it interesting. You know, and we so often talk about how we want to see drivers push themselves to the limit and often beyond that. And today you saw that, though. You saw Denny Hamlin. You saw Michael McDowell. You saw Tyler Reddick. You saw Bubba Wallace. All have issues when they're trying to push and run hard and go for the lead. You need that. And that, to me, shows that this isn't easy. And this, while, yeah, you couldn't, this wasn't, you know, coming from the back and making passes and that kind of thing was a challenge. It at least opened the opportunity to see different things happen. It wasn't the typical race you see on an intermediate track with this next-gen car. And I would not even compare – I don't think you can compare this at all to some of the Kansas races or some of the races we've seen, you know, Charlotte, for example. But in its own unique way, it delivered. Maybe that's because our expectations are so low for this track that it doesn't matter, and any little you know, fleeting entertainment that we can take from this, we're going to take. But at least today we got something that I don't think anyone, I think the expectations were so low going this that I think it was going to be really, really hard for people to come away from this feeling positive, just because, you know, everybody realizes that how hard this is. And yet I think there's a good amount of people that walked away from this going, damn, Texas, man. How about Texas?
I think Texas overall had a good weekend, right? I mean, you even go back to the truck race, and yes, Kyle Busch dominated that race, but it's not like, I don't think the amount of laps led was reflective of, that was a pretty competitive race, right? And then the Xfinity race, obviously you look at the last run, you know, yesterday with Sieg trying to hang on and Mayer slowly reeling him back in. And then obviously the spectacular finish there, right? The Atlanta worthy finish. That was great. So they had three, I think, compelling races. I mean, if you came to all three, I don't think you would have been like, man, these were three boring races by any stretch of the imagination. And maybe it looks good coming off Martinsville and Richmond. You know, yeah. Maybe it's like, oh, you know, this, you know, but I thought, I mean, look, Pat Iverson, who works with us, is one of our F1 editors. He lives here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I had him come out to the track and help me out today. And, you know, I think he was pretty, you know, he thought it was pretty compelling. You know, we sat up in the press box, watched it, and there was a lot going on. We were never talking about the race. We were never like, oh, this is boring. This is super bad or anything. You know, I thought it was good. So, you know, Texas is the one racetrack in the, was it a good race poll history dating back to the beginning of 2016 that has never had a race above 70%. It's never gotten to 70% of all the, I think 15 races, 15 Texas races or something. It's never been above 70%. I think today is going to be the day. I really do.
Yeah, history, baby.
Yeah. I mean, we can make our picks right now if you want to, since we're already talking about it.
Let's do it. Why not? We're on topic. Let's do it.
All right. Did I lose? Did I win?
No, you won last week.
Okay. So I got to go first. Well,
5-4 in the year, by the way.
Oh, is it? Oh, I'm coming back.
Yep.
Ooh, yeah. All right. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
A streak.
I haven't even been looking at the score lately. Does Big Joe
Wall
still?
That's probably a good thing for you.
Still tweeting us?
He updated it today. He apologized. He has been doing it the last couple of weeks or whatever. No.
Oh, okay. I didn't see it.
He apologized, but 5-4. He did update. 5-4.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously, look, it's a Chase Elliott victory. That's got to be worth a few points. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to be worth like that many, but it's certainly people aren't mad about it, right? And I think, again, like, yes, it was, first of all, it was a long race, for a 400 mile race, 3 hours, 38 minutes or something. But, if you watched it, I mean, I just don't think you're going to be like, wow, that was, I hated that. I mean, it got a little silly with some of the cautions, but they were going for it, right? It wasn't like people doing stupid stuff all the time. It was, they were racing hard and, you know, they were like Denny going for it, you know, like, they're trying to go for the win. They're trying to go for the lead. And as you said earlier, they push too hard and overstep and there's a consequence for it. Oh, I don't have a problem with that at all. You know, what's wrong with that? So yeah, there's a lot
That's
of
racing,
but yeah. So, but it is still Texas. So I don't know if you're going to have an overwhelming, like, yay. But I honestly think this could be in the high 70s. All for some reason, I'm thinking 77%. That may be too high. Maybe too high.
No, I mean, especially a good guess.
It's never been over 70 though. So
you're right. I mean, it's a really good pick. The straw poll, you know, getting some feedback from some folks. Don't shake your head. It's okay for people to comment on what they thought of the race.
Oh, all right, whatever. Go ahead. Tell me about your straw poll.
No, I am not. Never mind. You don't deserve to hear it. That kind of attitude.
It doesn't matter. You already have the information. Whether I hear it or not is going to come out in your guess. So
I think 77 is a good number. Chase Elliott won. Denny Hamlin crashed racing Elliott, which I think maybe a little bonus point there for some people. Good finish. Man, 77 is so good. I want to say 79.
You were going higher. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah.
That makes me nervous. Again, I'm not seeing a ton of compelling reason to vote it down. So,
yeah,
maybe it could be in the 80s, but I do think it's going to be the new P1.
It'll be higher than 70.
Texas races, and yeah, I think so. I think it deserves it. I mean, I think, you know, it's funny because, and I don't know, like if this was a playoff race and all this stuff was happening and this was taking out contenders or whatever. Would people feel better about it, worse about it? Like, is it okay that it's just, hey, it's just another race?
I think this is part of it. And we wrote about this, or I know I did. I think maybe you did too. We talked about it at least, is that this taking this out of the playoffs removes that pressure in the spotlight that comes with being a playoff track, right? And and all of the focus of, oh, is this a worthy track for the playoffs? And et cetera, and especially if you're fighting, you know, what I by all accounts today, and you can obviously you're there. I heard the crowd was actually pretty good today from people that were there. It sounds like the ticket sales were strong. So. Good weather. Little cool.
Definitely the best crowd since the pandemic, for sure. I mean, just eyeball tests.
I just think taking this out of that fall, which has just been plagued by bad weather, bad luck, competition, all of those things. And the spotlight of being a playoff race, especially for sometimes it was a late round playoff race. Like if you won here, you go to the championship. I think putting it here removes a lot of that. And we joked about it last week, but there's really truth in this. You're following two subpar races that weren't very good, where people all week were up in arms, including us, about something needs to be done. This can't continue. And so you just had a lot of things in your favor today. You had the wind at your back. And kudos to Texas, man. They came through.
So does it still need to be changed? Does Texas still need to be reconfigured? Because I would vote yes. But I would vote just to please change turns one and two. Don't make it in Atlanta. I think this is salvageable. And, you want another Atlanta now?
I don't know. I mean, if you're going to spend the money to do it, I think you have to spend the money to do it. And you can't just say we're going to do one and two and hope. I'm going to regret saying this because I know the short track package is what the short track package is, but like build another short track, like build a 3/4 mile racetrack, you know, and you can race Indy cars there still. And like, I don't know. I think in the grand scheme of NASCAR, I do think that short tracks are your bread and butter, and you're going to get better racing, more consistent, better racing on those tracks and your intermediate tracks. And I know with the next gen car the last couple of years, that's not been the case, but I feel like eventually this is going to flip again, because that's the how the history has always been. And so if you're going to spend the money and do something bold, like do something different. And if that's Atlanta, then so be it. But just going into this, if you're going to reconfigure and you're going to do, we're just going to redo one and two, like there's a chance you may end up kind of in the same predicament you're in now, where the corners don't align, it's not accurate, and it doesn't mesh, and you may not have it may not actually fix the problem. And so that's my concern, is you're going to spend this money and do this, and you could ultimately be in the same spot.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not really sold on that. I just, first of all, the footprint here, I think, makes it difficult to make too drastic of a change. That's why they haven't really taken out stands in the first place, right? The way the suites are above all the way up and down the grandstand, and the way the Speedway Club is, and the way the the condos are, all that stuff, right? Like, I feel like the footprint sort of is what it is in some cases. Let's not get rid of all the mile and a half tracks now too. I mean, yes, Atlanta turned out okay, and people really liked that last one, but now let's not make, mile and a half all of a sudden an endangered species when those have really good racing. What?
But they're not a danger. You got two at Vegas. You got two at Kansas. You're going to have two at Charlotte. I mean, that's six right there. Like, I don't know. Okay.
But then if you get rid of Texas, you've gotten rid of Texas, you've gotten rid of Atlanta, and you have Charlotte, Vegas, Kansas, Homestead.
That's six. So seven. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not in favor of it. That's all I'm saying. I'm not in favor of it. I don't think you need eight super speedway races a year. So
no, and I don't. And listen, I don't think if you do this, I don't think you should go to Atlanta. Like I go back and forth.
You just
on
said
that.
You said
honestly, in a perfect world, I'd go to I'd go to a short track.
Okay. Well. Yeah. I'm not. I can't advocate for any additional short tracks at this time. So.
Okay.
All right. Well, before we go any further, let's talk about our sponsor for today. It is FanDuel, America's number one sports book. I know we've been talking about this a little bit, but you don't want to miss these bonus offers that they have right now, especially if you are in North Carolina and you are getting the offer for new customers getting $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you bet your first $5. And please take advantage of our code by doing this. So go to FanDuel.com/teardown to sign up. You can bet on everything from the individual race winners to prop bets to which driver is going to take home the season-long championship, and all on an app that is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Start your engines with $200 in bonus bets, win or lose, when you place your first $5 bet. And again, that is FanDuel.com/teardown to get started. FanDuel is an authorized gaming operator of NASCAR. But you must be 21 and over and present in North Carolina. First online real money wager only. Obviously I've been sick here, so I'm not getting this right here today, Jordan. I'm not nailing my ad read.
Your excuse. $10. You've been under the weather this week. It's okay.
$10 deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable. Bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at fanduel.com/sportsbook. If you have a gambling problem, call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. So, speaking of that, because you can bet on the season-long championship now, how do you feel about Chase Elliott as a championship contender after he has finally snapped his streak and is back to victory lane?
You have to give him credit. You have to put him in that category, right? I mean, if you look at the numbers and the consistency.
Who says you have to?
I mean, I'm listening to Alan Gustafson afterwards, and he was pretty – Alan Gustafson was – did you hear Gustafson's comments? You're like, how many wins has Kyle got? We got one. We got the same number as Kyle. Like, he's right. Like, they're you look at the points. You look at the average finish. You look at those metrics. They're right in the mix. And so they're doing – it seems like whatever issues they had a year ago, which – we still really haven't been able to identify what they were, but whatever it was a year ago, they weren't winning races, they weren't leading laps, weren't winning stages, and all of those things. They seem to have gotten over that, and they certainly seem to have found their form. And I will say, if you go back and you take out 2023, and that was what it was, you know, missed races for suspension and injury, Elliott has made the championship four every year since 2020, except for last year. Like, so They look like a team that's very much in the mix. And they also won the regular season title in 2022. They don't look like a team that – they look like that team. Like, they're doing these things. Like, they still need to make gains. Like, if we're going to power rank these guys, Byron obviously is probably P1 in my book. I would put Denny P2. Larson's probably third. But Larson's inconsistency is – you know, today the wheel thing, like, it's hard to blame them. I don't really know why that happened, but they're really, really strong. They just don't finish races well. Like, that's a problem for me. And who would you confidently put? Let me ask you this. Would those be your three right now? Like, for sure. Hamlin, Byron, Larson, in some order, three of the four.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So we agree on the three. So it comes down to the fourth, and who's, right now, have we seen out of the fourth? Martin Truex Jr. has had consistency times, though that's kind of gone by the wayside, and they just have not been able to put together finishes. Also has not won a race this year. Blaney's been good at times, but has not won a race. And Ford has got its issues. Christopher Bell, as the speed is there, results are not there, inconsistent. I look at this team, the 9 team, and I think they deserve a spot in that among those four as a quote-unquote championship four. I don't know, we call them favorites or whatever you want to label it. I just don't see a worthy candidate for that spot.
I mean, I think it there's certainly a compelling case to be made. I do my mini power rankings, which is 5 drivers in my top 5 column each week on The Athletic. And I had Chase Elliott in there last week. Some of the commenters did not like that, but I thought he was running pretty well. And you mentioned the Alan Gustafson news conference, which was pretty combative in some ways. I think good-natured combative. Yeah. But he was basically, you know, all the questions are, hey, you know, you guys are back, or what's been the struggles and how much you guys have struggled and all this stuff, right? And a lot of that, which I pointed out during the news conference, is it's a lot of it we're basing off Chase's words himself, right? Like, he comes in every week and he's saying, yeah, I don't have my arms around this thing. We're struggling. I'm trying to get back. You know, I just want to be somebody that runs. How many times did we hear Chase Elliott say last year, mm-hmm. I just want to be someone who's in the conversation again, that when mm-hmm. I come in the media center afterwards, you guys aren't surprised I'm here, right? But Gustafson's point was, okay, now, you know, he's like, you guys are giving me questions about the next gen car and us, you know, Chase not being as good in it, right? Okay, well, regular season champion, the first year of the next gen car, won 5 races. Last year, he finished second, as Alan Gustafson noted, he finished second at Fontana the week before he broke his leg. So it's not like he was off to a bad start necessarily. So he breaks his leg, and yes, they don't win again. But if you look at the stats, we've talked about this before, Chase Elliott in 2023 ended up with the 5th best average finish mm-hmm. of any driver. So it was Byron last year, Byron, Buescher, Hamlin, Bell, Chase Elliott. He had a better average finish than the eventual champion, Ryan Blaney. So yes, he didn't win. And so you're like, oh, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, he didn't make the playoffs and everybody thought he was going to. I think that, and then when you hear Chase say, okay, we're not as good. And then I think obviously anecdotally, and when you look at it, okay, he hasn't been running with his teammates. That's what really, okay, wow, mm-hmm. Look at Byron, look at Larson, when they're doing all this stuff. Where's Chase? Where's Chase? Chase isn't up there. So I think you can say, well, wait a minute. Like, you know, they're not doing very well. But again, Gustafson's point was, now look at this year. Elliott is fourth in points. And mm-hmm. as he pointed out during the news conference, he had the fourth best average running position entering today. And guess what? After today, if you look at the average finish for this year so far, Chase Elliott is tied for the second best average finish in the Cup Series with William Byron. He is ahead of Ty Gibbs. He's ahead of Kyle Larson. He's ahead of Denny Hamlin. So, you know, his point was, are we really that bad? Like, you know, aside from not winning, are we, you know,
they also haven't led a bunch of laps though either. I mean, it's not just
no, winning, and that's what I don't think we're wrong, but no. I can also see where he's like, we're not that off, you know?
Yeah. And he's not wrong either. Like, we're both right.
So, you know, in terms of a championship contender, though, I would say no, not yet. Elliott himself admitted, hey, look, you know, this was great today, but I still got a lot of long ways to go. I still got a lot of work to do. So, look, it's a great step. They're running well. I don't think the, you know, Chase has lost it narrative certainly has anything to really hang your hat on, you know, concrete wise at this point, but we'll see where it goes. I just still wouldn't, you know, he could very well win Talladega next week, right? But I think if you get to Dover and you know, he's leading laps and he beats Larson and Byron and Hamlin, then you're like, okay, yeah, that's very convincing. But at this point, you know, I think he's fringe championship four contender, and I'm not ready to say that he would be a true championship contender just yet. That's just my take.
No, but we're not. We agree, though. I mean, like, he's fringe. He's, I think those other three are clearly ahead of him to some degree, but he's definitely worthy of that fourth spot just because you look like there is not another driver out there who's really deserved it right now. And he does. And you look at all the metrics and he's qualifying well. I know he didn't qualify well this weekend, but he's qualifying well most weeks now. He's running well on a variety of different tracks. And this is, it sounds silly, but I think him getting a win in a mile and a half racetrack in a next gen car, it matters. It really does. I think that there's credence to that because that has been the really, as well as he ran in 2022 with this car and got wins at a variety of different tracks. And one of those races, by the way, was a 1.3 mile track at Nashville, although concrete. So it's not like he's, you know, he's been fine in intermediates, but still has been missing that win. This was a big thing. And you know, no offense to Chase, but like Chase is always going to say like, he's not doing a good job and he always needs to yeah. do better, you know? And like, so like him saying like, oh yeah, I suck. Like, oh yeah, we're not there. Well, yeah, that's what he's always going to say. Like he could win every race and he's still gonna be like, oh, I suck. Like, you know? So I just think they're there. And the thing of this too is like, again, there is no one else that's really risen up right now to take that mantle. And the fact is, the other thing is, he drives for Hendrick. And it feels like unless you drive for Hendrick or JGR, you know, you're kind of fighting an uphill battle. And I know at various points, you know, Chastain was obviously very good today. Tyler Reddick had a potentially winning car today as well. And we've seen other teams at various points this year. Blaney, for example, and Penske have its moment. But it really... the reality is, Hendrick and Joe Gibbs Racing have won every race but one. And the one race they didn't win was on a quasi super speedway, whatever we want to probably want to refer to Atlanta. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I mean, I think the more at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, Reddick's going to get his a little bit, but, and you would think that Penske's going to get a couple along the way, but really.
Chastain will pop up there.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is a Hendrick and Joe Gibbs world, and everyone else is living in it.
Yeah, I agree with you, and especially now that you look at the top six in points are all Hendrick and JGR drivers because Blaney fell two spots today. So it's literally Larson, Truex, Hamlin, Elliott, Byron, Gibbs. And of course, Bell could easily be up there, right? But he's just been plagued by some inconsistency. So he could easily be in the top seven. And then Bowman, he fell four spots today, but he was in the top 10 in points. And he's had a couple bad breaks or he could be up, you know, pretty high, I think, in points. So, yeah, I mean, those eight drivers right there are going to be ones that you look at, you know, every week, and then you throw a few more in there. But Ford's still not winning at this point is becoming an increasing concern. So I do think, I mean, the stat that blew me away that I think Fox said was that this was Elliott's first top five on an intermediate track in the next gen era. That was really, I really just can't get over that. But aside from that, yeah, I mean, I think they're obviously Chase fans are, it's not been like a years and years long drought, but it's been enough of a drought that they, I'm sure, are going to really enjoy this.
Sure. One. A lot of frustration among the Elliott fans. A lot of blame going around. And Alan Gustafson has been in the crosshairs. And Chase, to his credit, has been very adamant that my crew chief is my crew chief and he's not going anywhere. And they wrote it out. And it seems like they've come out the other side now.
So you mentioned something that I wrote on The Athletic this week, which was, by the way, not a scathing column about Texas. It was simply, hey, Texas has been the most criticized track. How did we get to this point? And I detailed the timeline of, you know, the reconfiguration and what it was supposed to do, and the drivers getting more and more vocal about it. Chase Elliott himself, when asked by front stretch Stephen Stump this week, said, you know, hey, yeah, we did this because we were trying to wait out rain delays and weepers. But he said before this race, I would rather have the rain delays and the weepers than what they've done to this place now. And then he goes out and wins the race. But, you know, of course, that always happens right? That, like that, right? But, you know, I just think that it's more of like a, at some point, especially with the year that it had the All-Star race for the first time, and people started just, it became like a sport just to dump on Texas. And so that was what I was writing about. But, we also have some other great stuff on The Athletic aside from just Texas bashing.
It's all you, buddy. It's all you.
Okay. All right. It wasn't even bashing. Anyway, I know you have a story you're excited about coming up about what it's like to be called to the NASCAR hauler. When will that be? That's coming out this week
Tuesday.
Or soon?
Yeah, Tuesday. Okay. It was cool. I talked to Mike Helm about it.
Give us a little. Yeah, little taste, little preview.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it's equivalent of being called in the principal's office, right? And I thought it was interesting, as we've all heard the stories, and like, you know, Mike Helton is probably the most intimidating guy and one of the most intimidating guys in modern NASCAR history of like what it's like to be called in there and have to deal with him. But then NASCAR's kind of shifted that as well. Like, it's no longer you go in there and get screamed at and yelled at and you kind of get put in your place. It's much more of a NASCAR's evolved, and it's kind of a, you know, here's what you can do better, here's what you need to do better kind of thing. And there's kind of talks about how NASCAR has evolved from that approach and what drivers' experiences of being called in the haulers like.
And of course, you can go to theathletic.com/NASCAR to read all of our stuff, and we would really appreciate your support as well. Jordan, there was a few key moments here in this race where the strategy simply worked out, and it benefited a few different drivers. One was Chase Elliott. Alan Gustafson said afterwards in the post-race press conference, we were literally going to pit right when that caution came out. We got a break there. So by running long, he was able to really maximize that. And then Brad Keselowski, you know, he said he was pretty much a 15th place car. They ran long. And they benefited, and they were in contention for the win. But, you know, you were watching Keselowski, and I was really thinking, man, he's got fresher tires. By 18 laps, so it wasn't a ton, but 18-lap fresher tires. And on a day when tires at least mattered a little bit more than they had been, according to Chase Elliott. And I'm thinking, man, this is – here. I'm looking at a Brad win here is what I thought, not a – Yeah. Elliott win or Hamlin.
He's going to be the one who's going to snap his losing streak.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. But then, you know, his tires evened out, but he's still up there, you know, contending late, but like he just couldn't launch on the restarts. He couldn't really go. And afterwards he says, we really didn't have the speed that we needed, but you know, we hung in there long enough and, you know, we showed spirit on our team, but he talked about it's been really frustrating to not have the speed that they need right now. So he is still 17th in points. He gained a spot today, but still outside the playoff bubble. And, you know, second place, he'll take it, obviously, but just RFK, Fords overall, at least consistently. I mean, you saw the Stuart Haas cars, at least Briscoe, Gregson, they were running up there for a while. But I don't know, if you're Ford right now, how are you feeling about this season?
I'm worried. I thought Kevin Harvick on
it's a quarter way through the season, by the way.
Yeah. Quarter of the way through. I'd be worried. I mean, honestly, outside the super speedways, you've had your moments. But I thought Kevin Harvick on the Fox Sports Pre-Race show today had a really good comment about Brad Keselowski, and he talks about how Brad's got results this year and he's had some decent finishes. But he feels like they haven't had speed. Those finishes are mainly Brad lifting the team up and carrying them, basically. And I think that was a really fair statement and a really good way to kind of describe that team of like, they don't wow me. And then you look at the numbers like, oh, yeah, they're running okay. But that's Brad and it's Matt McCall. And it seems like they're just figuring it out. Today's a perfect example. Things go their way. They took advantage of it, but they didn't have outright speed. And that to me, in the big picture, is the concern. Is there hasn't been a race on a non-super speedway this year where four teams have gone there, qualified well. We've seen them qualify well. We saw Logano qualify well, McDowell, you know, those kind of things. We've seen these guys qualify well. And then go out and lead a bunch of laps and be the man and be like, whoa, if we're going to win this race, we're going to have to go through that guy today. Blaney at times has been in the mix, but he hasn't been the man. You know, that kind of thing. Larson's been the man. Byron has been the man. Hamlin has been the man. They win in stages, and you're like, okay, like these guys are blowing the doors off. Are we show up to a racetrack, and you're like, oh man, you know the Hendrick Chevys are going to be fast. You know the JGR Toyotas are going to be fast. Well, when we talked about the Penske cars, like, oh man, these are the guys to beat today. If you are going to win this race, you're going to have to go through those guys. Hasn't happened. That to me is concerning. And RFK has been okay. Like at times, I feel like they're punching above their weight class and they're making do with a car that isn't to their liking, and they're still getting some finishes, which bodes well. RFK also in the Brad Keselowski era has been a second half team. You look at a year ago, Chris won his three races starting in the summer, late summer, and Brad really kind of turned it on then. So you can say, okay, you know, they're kind of on that path. They're kind of doing that course of how they do it. But you got to have speed in your race car because its speed is a difference maker in this. And they just don't have it right now. And that's concerning. And it's great when you have circumstances go your way and you're able to capitalize and leave with a second place finish like Brad did today. But that you can't count on that every single week. And if that's what you're counting on, you're going to be in a world of hurt. And I think that is increasingly concerning, especially when you look at this stretch of schedule that we've talked about. There are a lot of tracks that really kind of set up well for the second half of the year. And you're going to short tracks, going to intermediate tracks, and you're really going to get a good sense now of who has got what. And if we don't see Ford do something over these next few weeks when you go to the Dovers and the Darlingtons and the Kansas and the Charlottes, that's going to be concerning, very concerning.
Let's talk about some other people that had interesting days, whether up or down. You know, and there were so many ups and downs because there was people going for the lead and wrecking, and then that changed their entire day, right? But Tyler Reddick, you know, you're thinking, man, he is controlling this race right now. He is out to a 5-second lead over Denny Hamlin, 10-second lead over. Oh, and then they come in. They were controlling the race. Denny is not able to, or they don't undercut Reddick. They pit on the same lap. Gabe Hart sees Reddick pit, so he calls Denny in right away. And Reddick didn't wait too long or anything like that. And you're looking at it, and it's like, you see Denny's pit stall was way toward the turn four end of pit road. And Reddick's was closer, looking at the press box, closer, you know, to start finish. So I'm like looking right down at Reddick's car, and you see Denny finishes pit stop and he's coming. And you're like, wow, Reddick's still taking a long time. Oh my God, he's still sitting there. Oh my God, he's still sitting there. Denny drives right past him and like by like 30 car lengths or whatever. And then Reddick finally leaves pit road. You're like, what just happened? Again, the 2311 pit crews? Are you serious? Holy crap. And this is why, like, I'd picked Reddick for the final four, for to have a final four spot this year, is one of my picks preseason. And I regret that all the time now, because it's like, at these track position races where the pit crew means so much, I don't have really any faith in their pit crews, you know, to come out with a key clutch pit stop when it matters. I mean, to have that long of a, and I never saw if TV showed what happened, or I don't know, did they show it?
Yeah, they just got hung up on the left rear, and it was about 5 second difference between pit stops.
Wow. I mean, that's, and then ultimately, look, there's cautions at the end, so you don't know whether he could have gotten past, or, you know, Elliott got control of the race at one point because he was barely out in front of Denny at the last scoring loop, so that changed. You know, so it's not like Reddick definitely would have won the race had that not happened, right? But that was a big moment where it was like, oof, wow, that seemed killer. But he still finishes fourth, but you're just like, they seem to have speed in their cars, but what, man, like the, that's just, and it, you know, you talk to people over and over again, you're like, the one thing about the pit crews is you can't fix this stuff easily, you know? And I think Denny's talked about that on his podcast as well. Like, you sort of have what you have. You can't just go get, you know, most of these pit crew guys are on long-term deals, and you can't just go pluck some guy from another team or lure him away with money. And you have to develop these guys over time, and it's not going to get, you know, worlds better at this point. And that's tough. That's really tough.
And it's unfortunate.
I don't know if you
want
to respond to that before. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Reddick, it's unfortunate because Reddick just continues to get suffered. And you can see the frustration building. It's cost him numerous potential wins a year ago. And you could argue, like, this was a track position race. And when you get back like that, and he did, I would imagine the frustration's there. You probably feel like you have to kind of, like, carry your team and overcome this. Like, oh, I can't call to my pit crew. I'm going to have to get these spots myself. And I think you could make the case he probably overdid it there in turn two, which I know it's easy to do, and you just lose control of everything, and it's just, you're on the backside of it then. And that's to me is when this team gets in scramble mode, is they get in trouble. It's like something happens and then it just snowballs, and it's one thing after another. And we saw it last year at Michigan. We've seen it other times this year. I don't know how you fix it, but you got to fix it, because it's been a repeated issue for 2311 now, going back several years. And I'm not going to ding Reddick and say that he can't make the championship four, because I looked at the schedules, Vegas, Martinsville, Homestead, like two of those three tracks are really good tracks for him. So yeah, but you know, he can go win any one of those. But when you've got a pit crew that is mistake prone, your margin of error is slim. And that round especially, you got to be on it. And you can have some bad races and you can win, and that's great, but if you can't count on your pit crew when you come down pit road, because we know you're going to get green flag pit stops at Las Vegas, you're probably going to have that at Homestead to some degree, you can't do anything else.
Yeah, and look, it's similar to the conversation we had before the playoffs last year. Didn't we both have him out in the first round? I think because we didn't trust the team. And then he made the final eight, and, you know, had Martinsville gone differently, you know, and it all worked out for him or something, he would have made the final four. So, yeah, I mean, it's not like the season's over, but it's when you're like, man, you're looking at these races like you talked about where there's going to be green flag pit stops, and you feel like at some point they're going to have a slow stop, and oof, that's tough. Daniel Suarez ends up coming back to finish fifth today. I mean, that's a big win. Yeah, yeah. They seemed like they needed some momentum there. Chase Briscoe finished sixth. Bubba Wallace, obviously, you know, he could have had an even better day, but at one point has to go all the way to the back as Larson did, but comes all the way back up to finish seventh. The RCR cars, Austin Dillon,
yes,
eighth, and Kyle Busch ninth. Boy, they talk about needed that. Jeez, mm-hmm. Those guys.
First time Austin all Dillon. Year they've had both cars in the top 10.
Yeah. Well, they had a third car in this race too, and that one finished last. So.
And Austin Hill was running well actually for a while. I mean, I know some of it was track position, but he was running.
Yeah, he decent, was one of the beneficiaries, you know, as Elliott was with that early staying out long.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, he was up there, and then I guess he had steering issue or something. Went to the garage, and that was that. And then Hosovar, we talked about it. I think Eric Easton noted at one point, all three of the Spire cars were running top 15 before a lot of the chaos. What happened to Zane Smith? I saw that he finished 26, but I mean, he was up there holding strong in the top five for some of the race.
I thought he got caught up in something, but don't hold me to that.
Okay. Yeah, because I never saw it, and all of a sudden he was 26 at the end. That's too bad for him because he was having a good day. I'll tell you one thing I was surprised about. Kyle Larson, you know, his wheel comes off and he gets the two-lap penalty, right? And it really felt realistic. Like, man, he's so fast. Cliff Daniels saying, once we get our laps back, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to be in this thing. And I'm like, I believed it. I'm like, yes, I think they will. So he gets back on the lead lap and he's, you know, he gets cautions and he's slowly inching his way up there. And at one point, I think he restarted 20th or something. And then he went backwards briefly. He got stuck three wide. And then I don't think he ever cracked the top 20 again after that. Like, he finished 21st. I was just like, what happened? Did you know? I mean, did they ever say, like, how come he never was able to get back up?
He said his car was plowing tight. He just lost the handle of the car in traffic, and it wasn't the same. And I think that was the big thing, is once he lost that track position, he was never going to get it back. And I think this kind of circles back to the bigger point about Texas, is like, you go back to a Kansas, you go back to a Charlotte, and even in Las Vegas, when you've got a fast race car and you get in the back, you can still make moves and get to the front and pass cars. And today, it frankly didn't. You weren't able to do that. Like, that was, this was a, you kind of had, you can make some moves and kind of put yourself in a position, but you really kind of had to use your strategy and you had to cycle back up. It wasn't like you could just go out there and pass 10 or a dozen cars. And so that was, to me, that's the big difference for me from this race, from like you see on other intermediate racetracks. And Larson is a perfect example of that, of a guy who, once he got in traffic and heavy traffic, was like, whoa, this is a whole different game changer. And that was the case.
Yeah. Ty Gibbs, you know, I thought he was going to be, you know, up there for a while.
Issue on pit road.
Front row. Yep. And, you know, ultimately finishes 13th. So, yeah, there's a lot of guys. I mean, you go just through the whole thing and just be like, wow, this guy was up and then down and then mm-hmm. down, then up. And, you know, just kind of wild. Jimmy Johnson, poor guy.
What a weekend.
Yeah. You know, they ultimately repaired his primary. After crashing in practice, but and he finished on the lead lap. I know that's crazy for Jimmy Johnson to be like, wow, he finished on the lead lap, but it's just been such a struggle for him in this car. And he talked about in his press conference how, you know, he spent a lifetime, he said, driving off the right rear of the car and hanging it out and being loose and being able to modulate the throttle with one foot, right? Like, and just drive it loose and hang it out and be able to make speed that way. In this car, you can't do that. You have to drive through the right front. And he said it's just taken him a lot of adjustment. They talked about it in the broadcast as well, how completely different it is for him. And, you know, it's like, you don't want to see him struggle like this, because you want to remember how great he's been. And in 2 weeks, he's going to Dover, where, you know, he's just been historically his best track. And, I don't want to see him suck at Dover, right? Like, I want to see him go and be like, oh, there he is, Jimmy, right? But with this car, it's so different. He said he already looked at the simulator and it doesn't quite drive the same. So we will, we'll see how that goes. But, there's gotta be some sort of feel good for him at some point, right? Like, he's since he's come back to dabble part time in NASCAR, it just hasn't gone well.
Well, like, how far Jimmy has fallen is the fact that we're celebrating, like, we're talking like, he finished on the lead lap. That's good. Like, and It's not.
I think that
like
shows how hard it is. But
agreed, 100%. And it's really hard in a part time. You flipped over to a new car, part time schedule, no limited practice, very little practice. And no matter what time you spend in the simulator, it's still not 100% the same. And so that's part of it. And reality is, like, this was the way it was in 2022, though, Jeff. Like, you know, he didn't win a race and he was struggling and he was getting outran by his teammates on the regular. And the guy who took over his team won the championship in 10 races the next year.
Yeah. Let's take a few questions. You know, we do these on YouTube live after the race. And Colby, our producer, says the chat is blowing up with questions.
Oh,
so
very popular.
Let's hear a few of the questions that you guys have before we wrap this thing up. Before my voice, I was proud that I got my voice back to this level. I'm not currently sick, but I just, you know,
this
had
is,
the frogging.
This is a gritty, gutty effort. This is like Ricky Rudd taping his eyes open, you know, Earnhardt winning the pole at Watkins Glen with a broken collarbone. I mean, this is you. This is gutty. This is impressive. I'm kudos.
Okay. All right. You're just over the top today. Okay. Andrew in our chat says, does the Cup Series need to be on short tracks? After today's race, I'm not sure.
Yes.
Of course it does.
But
here's the thing. And I wanted to talk about this also. Dale Jr. on his podcast this week reacted to our short track stuff, right? And one thing he mentioned you, he name checked you and me. But, you know, he was talking about, you know, Bianchi talking about needs to lose a date. And he says, where y'all been? I've been on this. You know what I mean? And I think the answer, I thought about that. Where have we been? I think that when the next gen car comes out and it's not good on short tracks right away, you know, I could understand why he would press the panic button immediately. But also, there's got to be some sense of, like, we're being told by NASCAR, we're being told by, you know, the teams, people, like, you know, well, we'll get it better. We'll get it better, right? Like, and then, you know, NASCAR would say, well, we're looking at this, doing this with this splitter. Or we're going to try to soften the tire. We're going to do a test. So I think ultimately the answer to where have you been? Like we've been saying, okay, short tracks aren't good. But in terms of not pressing the panic button, I was trying to be patient. And then it got to the point finally last week where you're like, all right, look, they tried another new aero package. And clearly, aero is not the answer. It is not going to make a difference at this point. Forget it. Forget the aero, right? Like, it's got to be something else. Tires. Clearly, it's not going to be horsepower. Elton Sawyer went on Sirius this week, and they asked him again about the horsepower part. Mike Bagley and Pete Pistone. And he reiterated again, well, you know, we don't want to do raise horsepower because we're trying to get another manufacturer in here. And, you know, that's part of that. Like they're not going to want to do that. I guess that kind of bothered me a little bit because it's like, well, how they've been saying that for a few years now. And then like, how long are we all going to wait and not do something horsepower wise? Just if that's really the number one reason and it's not like, it'd be one thing if NASCAR came out and said, all right, it's cost. That's why we can't do it. Or it's too complicated or we'd have to do all this stuff, whatever. But when you're giving me the answer that primarily it's because you're trying to get Honda in or whatever, NASCAR is throwing away like 5 years potentially of like good racing just to get an engine better for 2 years from now that Honda would like or something who's not even here. I don't know. It just doesn't sit right. Like I wish that would not be the case. So, but it does seem like they had a driver's briefing this week, Jordan, and, they talked about, you know, from what the driver said, Goodyear was in the meeting and they talked about, yeah, we get it. Like we acknowledge we're going to try to get more aggressive on the tires. So anyway, that was a long answer to there need to be short tracks. But I wanted to answer Dale Jr.'s thing about where y'all been? Because I think it's valid. I just don't think I was ready to press the panic button because if they're saying we're working on stuff, then you want to give them a chance to figure it out.
Now, short tracks have been part of NASCAR for 76 years. They've been the fabric of the sport. This have running short tracks at, like this separates NASCAR from most other major racing series. You cannot lose that because the best races consistently through NASCAR history are on short tracks. The Bristols, the Martinsvilles of the world. And yes, I know the next-gen car on the short tracks frankly sucks the last few years. I get that. But I look at NASCAR history, and for most of those 75 years, they have been the best races consistently. Eventually, that's going to shift again. This is going to shift again, and it's going to go back to that. So, no, I'm not going away from these short tracks because I don't want to lose those short tracks. And the Richmond date thing, it's beyond just the racing there, frankly. It's also ticket sales. Like, that's part of it. You know, people are still going to Martinsville. People are still attending Bristol. Like, people are still in good numbers. I mean, it's not what the sellout streak was at one point, but people are still going there. Richmond has had ticket woes for years, and that is plays a major factor into why it's like, okay, we need to reevaluate this.
Somebody in the chat says, if you're Ross Chastain right now, what did you think of William Byron? I'm really glad they said this because I completely just forgot to talk about this incident. I don't know why I blanked on this. After the last lap, I ran down to the infield care center. Caleb Vestal from Speedway Digest was there, and we were waiting for Ross to come out. And Ross came out and just said, I just don't feel like talking about it. Not in a hostile way, just like didn't want to talk. So I was like, okay, get that. But then I went back and looked at the incident because I'm like, well, does he think that Byron wrecked him on purpose, or is he thinking, you know, he didn't get a fair shake from Byron? Is he mad because he just screwed up, or he felt like he screwed up? I don't know. Like, I watched the replay back a few times, and I just feel like Ross, it almost seemed like he lost a bunch of momentum off the corner, and Byron just kind of ran into the back of him. I don't think it was something where Byron was maliciously doing it. And then our colleague Pat Iverson went out and got a quote from Byron that just basically said, I was there, and it's the last lap, and I hate to do that to him because we race well, but I was there. I just didn't feel like Byron did something malicious or wrong there. I mean, what's your interpretation?
Hard racing. You're racing for second on the last lap, and you don't know. You get to second, you may be able to get to, you don't know what's going to happen to Chase in turn three and four. We've seen guys crash all day. That's hard racing. And if I'm Ross, I'm frustrated, right? I mean, you could have finished second in that race, and if you felt like you got ran into on the backstretch, which he did.
Did he?
You know, you're upset, and you're like, hell,
well, I would wait. Why are you saying that, though? So you're saying that you're saying that Ross, you know, he was going to finish second, and then Byron just kind of unfairly ran him over, you feel like?
No, I didn't say unfairly ran him over. I mean, it looked like, to me, from the replay I saw, it looked like Ross checked up a little bit. Like, Ross checked up a little bit, and the 24 was coming.
Well, that's and what I'm saying. Much so, Byron. So it's not, I don't think that was even, like, hard racing thing. I think it was, like, a whoops. Like, he lost speed, and Byron
you could also say if that was earlier in the race, Byron might have been more apt to, like, back off the throttle. And say give Chastain a break and say, okay, I'm not going to run into this guy because I don't want to wreck myself. But on the last lap, you're not going to do that because you can't. And so that's why I think it's hard racing.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Some other questions here. What's your honest opinion in the booth right now for the Cup Series? You know, people ask stuff like this a lot, and it's very hard for me to judge. And it's not a cop-out. Because I just don't, I like today I'm at the race, right? I'm not listening to the booth the whole time. I have like one ear on, I mean, well, two ears on the scanners, right? And like, I'm trying to watch, and then the booth stuff's kind of on the background. So like, sometimes I don't even really know what's being said. I mean, when I'm at home, it's a little bit different because I have more of like the TV broadcast on, but I'm still listening to scanners then. So I don't really consume people. People bring up TV a lot. I mean, I definitely notice commercials when I'm at home. Obviously, you don't notice that when you're at the track. But I just don't feel like I'm the person to weigh in on the booth type stuff when I have the scanners in, because I don't really know. I mean, it seems like they're doing a good, like Harvick has been a good analyst, and I know they have good chemistry, or they, you know, give each other crap. But beyond that, I don't even really know. What is everybody else's opinion? I have no idea. So I get asked that about TV stuff a lot, but I don't really have a great opinion for you. I'm sorry. Do you have one?
Yeah. I mean, even when I'm racing and watching a race at home, like honestly, the TV's low. Like it's, I barely even pay attention to what they're saying on TV. I'm listening to scanners and other stuff going on, and I'm actually listening to like three or four drivers at once, the way I set it up on my computers. And so it's not like, I think Kevin Harvick's been really good. The one thing that's jumped out to me is the banter between he and Bowyer is sometimes very good and it's good natured, and sometimes it gets a little excessive and it's like they're doing it too much. And honestly, I noticed it a couple of weeks ago, but I think it might have been Richmond or something in the media center, because I had it loud there. And I was like, this is just a lot. Like, you know, let's scale that back a little bit. But it was also a bad race. Like, you're, you know, filling time. So it's really hard to make an assessment, though, because, again, this sounds really bad. I'm not really listening to the TV. Like, there's other things that I prioritize over that, because I'm trying to hear what's going on the team side more than what the announcers are saying.
Yep. All right. Well, any final thoughts? You're going to Talladega next week.
Yeah, should be fun. Love Talladega.
Yeah,
should be fun race. This is might get it on JGR Hendrick.
Exactly what I was going to say. If there's going to be, man, if you go to Talladega and a Hendrick driver wins, oh man, that's going to be a long year for people that want anybody but Hendrick. But
man, if you're Ford though, you've got to have this one circled, right? Like you know they have their pre-race meeting and they circle the wagons, and it's a working with Ford drivers, and like you would have to think the intensity and the focus of getting a win next Sunday for Ford is probably very, very high, because they had opportunities to win at Daytona and Atlanta, it didn't happen, and we just talked about their issues elsewhere. It's like, we're gonna get one, guys. This might be it. Like, we need to get off this streak, because if it doesn't happen now, looking at that schedule, I don't know when it could be.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're Ford, do you want like an out of nowhere type Ford driver to come in, like somebody that's not currently in, you know, the top 16? Which there's only four Ford drivers right now in the top 16. You have Logano, Buescher, Briscoe, and Blaney. So would you rather have like a, you know, a Todd Gilliland or even an Austin Cindric or somebody like that win their way in, and then you're like, well, we got this one in. Now if we can just get our other guys in points too, or do you want one of your current, you know, guys to get some playoff points and kind of go on that route?
I just want to win. I don't care.
Yeah, okay.
I just want to break that streak. I don't want everybody talking every week of how Ford and Toyota have got all of these wins, and us with this brand new dark horse car that we've highly touted, and we're supposed to close the competitive gap, doesn't. Like, I don't care who wins the race, man. I just want a W.
Gotcha. Well, you will be out there to see that one. So hope you have a great time at that. Everybody, thanks as always for listening, and I will talk to you next time on the Teardown.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.